had pretty much everything in terms of a great job, family was very happy, and that was nearly taken away from me, and I would have had to start from scratch.
King hit and bloodied off the field and sacked by Carlton on it. It was, for all the wrong reasons, a big 2014 for Mitch Robinson. But that ugly period has ultimately shaped him into a well-balanced and now crucial member of a resurgent Brisbane Lions. As you're about to hear, Robinson actually lost sight from that King hit. He's become the Lions' resident barber. The door to his house is always open to teammates, and he's learnt to deal with ADHD, and he also, as he's about to reveal, has special talents as a recruiter. Mitch Robinson is this week's In The Game guest, and Mitch, as I say hello to you and thank you for your time for our listeners today, it's a mature Mitch Robinson that we get to speak to in 2019, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess you can say that. It's a word being thrown around a little bit now since obviously moved up to Brisbane and continue my career up there. So it's a word that I actually like to hear at some stages. It shows you the path I've had and where I've come from. So I don't mind that word.
Yeah, it wasn't always the case, was it? We'll probably delve into that at some stage just because it's all part of your story and you've never shied away from it. How did it come about, this maturity? I mean, you're nearly 30 into your 11th season of AFL footy. Yep. When was it? How was it?
I guess a turning point, as we spoke off air, was the Carlton incident. I guess the last one there that kind of led me to Brisbane, and also having a young child at the time. And I guess when I found out I didn't have a job and how I was going to provide for my family, that was a real tipping point for me. Changed a lot of habits, got away from some people that I needed to get away from, and Brisbane was the best thing for me. So got two children now, so it's all about dad life at the moment and loving it.
Yeah, 5 years ago, or 5.5 years ago now, that moment came, end of 2014. You played 100 games with the famous dot. Navy Blues.
On the dot.
And to hear you even just talk now, ever so briefly just there, and we'll delve into it right now, to have that taken away from you, it must have been a real confronting moment.
Yeah, so played my 100th game at Carlton and got the father-son rule. Probably the best moment of my life was running out with my son that game. Evidently got suspended in that game for a shirt front of Lee Adams, and that was my last game for the club, so I got 2 weeks of that, and that kind of started the spiral, I guess, from my delisting from Carlton Footy Club. So my time at Carlton, there's obviously a lot of things that I would love to have changed. I guess professionalism was one of the early days, and from then on it was more habits and I guess family members and stuff like that outside of footy.
Yeah, okay. And when you refer to people you needed to get away from, they were a bad influence on you, you were a bad influence on them, just the combination of the two was impacting on the decision that Carlton ultimately made?
It was probably just the fact, just the Melbourne bubble. I wasn't handling it as well. Everyone talks about how much they love to come to Melbourne to play footy. And in cases I talk to them, you know, it's a bit of an eye-opener. It is a very big landscape of footy and there's a lot of AFL chat going on. So for me, private life wasn't tough, but I just things that I probably would have got away with when I was 17, 18 before I got to AFL world was hard to get away from when you're here. So I had my brothers living with me at the time and it was good to, you know, kind of break away from them for a little bit and get over to Brisbane. And obviously, I wouldn't say I was going out every weekend, yada, yada. But the time that I did get in trouble, I was out probably a bit too late and things happened that I wish I could probably just leave the incident and just be more honest about what happened. So obviously, I wasn't in the wrong with getting King hit and all those things that happened to Jeffrey Gale at the same time. But if I could just probably be honest with the club and not worry about the circumstances and what was going to happen to me work-wise and professionally, would have probably been better for my case.
What was that the moment that ultimately broke it from a Carlton perspective for you, the Jeff Gallant incident?
I think so. I think their hand was kind of made to do that. I think that's my third incident at the club in my six years there. Yeah. And realistically, I hadn't been charged ever, like from the police or anything like that. So it was never like a big thing, but it was just wasn't professional by the club's standards. And I don't have any hard feelings towards him by letting me go. It was the best thing that happened to me, my life and my career. So we left on, I guess, good terms. And I think that was probably the moment. Initially, I was just a bit worried what was going to happen. I had a fractured eye socket. I couldn't remember the incident too much. So I didn't even know what really happened until the footage came out a few months later or when I was in Brisbane about to start my first game. The footage was released of what happened. So I can't remember that much of what happened. So that's why I was kind of in the dark and I couldn't put it all together and fathom what was actually going to happen. So I kind of went the other route and
yeah.
kind of backfired. Not backfired, but I guess if I had my time again, I'd just be honest with what happened because evidently I got delisted from the club. So
yeah, I'd forgotten the time frame of upon the release of that video. I think we can all
yeah,
remember.
It was about a year later, I think.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's a new club. That would have been hard to front the new faces with.
It was hard just to see the footage of me in that situation. I'd never been through it before. My family didn't really know what had happened that night. So it wasn't a hush-hush thing. It was just more lines of I didn't actually know what happened. Mm. And Jeffrey's story was the same thing, King hit as well. So at the time, it was a bit scary and all that kind of stuff. I couldn't see out of my eye. And net to this day, I have to wear glasses and take eye drops every morning, every night because the pressure's really bad in that eye. Yeah. So they were talking about possible eye loss, sight loss in that eye and glaucoma down the track. So I was a little bit scary at the time. Yeah. I was like, oh, what's going on? And once it all cleared up, it was kind of a silver lining type thing.
Well, was it one of those moments that does change your life, Mitch?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It just because I guess when I got home and my partner was at the front door and she was like, what happened to you? She was really worried and we had a 5-month-old at the time, I think, and I was out celebrating a birthday party and it was just a really scary time for her and the family and, I was getting hounded by the media for a week straight and Colton kind of put me on the front foot together and talk about it because I lied about my involvement, what actually happened for probably 24 hours and then it kind of came out. What really happened. So
right.
I guess, so. Yeah, it was definitely a life-changing moment just to – and I try and impart this knowledge onto younger kids that I meet and I did a second chance program. I was going around to rugby clubs in Brisbane to talk about, some mistakes that you make, try and learn from those. Mm. That was the real mistake in my life that I actually learnt from because you can always use that line.
Yeah.
Learn from your mistakes, don't do it again, yada, yada. That was actually the one that – I actually really learned from.
The lying and the covering up. Is that what you're referring to specifically? Yeah.
And the things that I was going through at the time, more so the actions leading up to that, drinking habits and what my weekends look like. So it was just, I had pretty much everything in terms of a great job, the family was very happy. I was
a young child.
Young child, I was playing good footy and that was nearly taken away from me and I would have had to start from scratch.
Mm. Now, it's interesting to hear you refer to it that way now and I think anyone who knows you well from both Carlton days and Brisbane days, and there's a link there, isn't there? Greg Swan's his name.
Yeah, I remember everything, really.
Do you really?
Yep.
Yes, because I believe Richmond had a verbal offer to you, but maybe not one that was in writing, but Brisbane at least had the commitment for 2 years if you wanted it.
Yeah, Brisbane came probably relatively early in terms of talking about what years look like contract-wise. And I spoke to Swanee, obviously, pretty early. Not really about football, just checking up on me, seeing how I am and stuff. And then it kind of led to that chat. But in terms of me talking to Lepa, he said, look, I don't know if there's really a role here for you, but we'd love to meet up with you and catch up with you and see how you're going with everything. And that's why I got along with Lepa as well, as more so as Swanee. But Richmond offered me a year. It was going from a fairly good pay packet at Carlton to below rookie wages at Richmond.
Right.
So I was looking at purely dollars and what's best for myself and my family getting out of Melbourne and going to Brisbane starting fresh. So that's why I went down that route with Brisbane. And it was a 2-year offer compared to one. So I was more, I guess, financial backing from that point of view.
And it was Greg Swan who...
It was Greg Swan.
Yeah, gave you the
So chance. I literally got out of Australia when that all happened just to clear the head and think about what's next for me. So that was a few months after that incident happened. I didn't play another game that year because my eye socket was really bad and I couldn't play because of pressure in the eye that I still have trouble with today. So I was always talking to Swanee. Then Richmond came to the table and then it kind of Brisbane put a contract that I could actually say, yeah, well, I'd love to come up. So getting out of Melbourne was number one thing for me. And if nothing had happened, I would have gone to Richmond, yeah.
Okay. And you've given the impression, Mitch, from that moment on, that you've been all in on everything you do.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So the second chance, I suppose, aspect to this conversation and your life story is one you've embraced.
It's just the way I've had to, really, in terms of I know what it feels like to have everything taken away from you. I listened to the podcast, yours actually, with Josh Thomas, and I kind of could see similarities in that with me. Obviously, he had 2 years taken away from him. I didn't lose any time in the game, but the career kind of flashed before your eyes, and I was thinking, what could I do better? How could I be the next best player? And I'd always when I got to Brisbane, I had a chip on my shoulder straight away as well. I was, you know, I wanted to prove to the footy world that I can still play footy and I could change who, especially the perception of me in the outside world and what the media can make you look at. And on behalf of myself doing that, not just the media writing bad things, but getting to Brisbane was a massive thing for me and my family, and I owe Brisbane everything. So I'm truly indebted to the Lions Footy Club, and also in that fact, Carlton for picking me up in the first place and giving me the opportunity to play footy. So I still have a soft spot for them, obviously.
Yeah. And when you've got a chip on your shoulder, as you refer to, you need time, don't you, to allow the footy world in this instance and even yourself to actually get things right. And do you feel now as you talk here, 5 years after joining Brisbane, that you're there? You are the person and player you always thought and wanted to be?
Yeah, definitely. I think always had a lot of like I was a really hard worker through my career. No matter what, I was always in good shape, trained well. So when I got to the club, did the things right. Is this when I left the club? Not having any hobbies outside of the game, having friends and family that I was with at the time just wasn't really great for footy. Yeah. So getting things in place for myself, having more structure in my life when I leave the club, go home. Obviously got two kids now. So when I leave the club and go home, it's family time for me. Date nights with the partner, like structuring everything, and obviously seeing a counselor and talking about things is really good for me. So yeah. I've been keeping a diary since 2013, and looking back at the moments when I was at Carlton, it was a little bit hard to read what was going on at the time. So it's always good to go through that and have a look at what I've been through and how much I'm happy for what I've got now.
Yeah, that's a daily entry in a diary, or
just when I feel like my head's getting a bit clogged. They can go from once a week to twice a month, I think, or twice a week. So I can be – it just varies as how I feel and what I write in there. So it's just on my laptop, and I feel for me I'm a bit of a writer, so I like to get everything out and write pretty much essays and my thing and talk about – like structurally talk about what I've been doing and how what I see the future holding and all that kind of stuff.
So there's a certain discipline obviously required to maintain that, isn't there? So that's all part of it, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I love writing. That's probably the only thing I was really good at in high school and my brief stint at college. So I like to write about things, and that's the way to get out of my head. Because I'm not a big communicator. That's something I've been working on a lot, especially in my relationship with my partner Emma, learning to communicate and talk things through. Like, I'm not a big emotional guy like that. Like, I might look like it on field or, the way I play my footy is pretty emotional, and I'm obviously invested in the game and footy, but off the field, I struggle to talk to a lot of people, so that's a good thing for me.
Okay. I keep getting told, Mitch, that the impact you've had on the club, and we'll get to the football side of it at some stage of this chat, but the off-field part of it, which is equally important in your life, and I think the way Brisbane Lions is unfolding at the moment, is crucial as well. And you've become pretty significant in the bonding of so many players, I've been told. You have these either impromptu or planned dinners that have become semi-legendary internally.
Yeah, I guess when I first got to the club, the first thing you notice is that there's a lot of percentage that's from interstate. Early days, there wasn't many Queenslanders or Brisbane players that were actually from that area. So that's probably the first thing, the culture that I noticed. A lot of the boys are pretty tight-knit. It's obviously exceeded what I thought now, like especially the time of the club now. If you come into the group, like we welcome everyone with open arms, and there's so many things around the new players and getting their partners involved and just making sure we build a strong culture in that regards, because we're all from, I think 50% probably from interstate now, because we've got a lot of homegrown talent in Brisbane, which is really good. So the thing you're probably talking about is the young brigade that comes around to my house. I kind of live between the Gabba and where everyone lives, so I'm like kind of central. So
where is that? Just
Norman Park.
Norman Park, yep.
So a lot of people live in Camp Hill, and they drive past my house if they usually beat the horn a lot just to annoy me. But they always rock up, as you said, impromptu, and just come see the kids more than me. And my partner will put on a feed for them and kind of play that mother role with the young blokes. She's pretty invested into making sure that we have that open door policy at the house. And I love it. The guys come around, I do a bit of barbering, cut their hair, probably too much. I don't get paid for it, so they give me a coffee when they come over, and I've probably had about five copies for lunchtime on my day off, so I'm buzzing by the rest of the day. So,
what does she cook? What does Emma cook?
She cooks a really good pasta, good steaks, fish. She's like, I'll say her cooking skills are amazing at the moment. So she actually really enjoys it, and it gives her a self of belonging as well, because she's from country WA, and I met her in Melbourne 8 years ago, and I think it's like a little family within a family we have at Brisbane, so it's a really good thing.
Are you able to tell us who goes?
Okay.
You don't have to if you don't want to.
No, I tell you, it's Cam Rayner, Alex Witherden, Eric Hipwood, obviously the Indigenous boys, Charlie, Cedric. There's about 10 of them that come through. You've got Tom Cutler.
And these are multi-weekly
events. These are twice a week just pop up at the house and come through. So I do a lot of cutting the hair, and you see like Jared Berry comes around too. The list goes on really. There's half a team that pops over. But it's a good thing for us, and it keeps us all pretty close-knit, and so it's a good thing.
And two kids, you referred to them, Chance
and Charlie.
So how old
Chancey boy is five. He's a very big human being for his age. So I think if we stay in Brisbane, he might be a rugby player, to be honest. But he honestly brings a lot of life to the Robinson household, and he's a bit of a rough kid, and everyone goes, oh, where'd he get it from? But obviously they say me, but... He's really good. And the club, the best thing I love about Lions is he comes out of training and he's allowed to come on the field after when we finish warming down. He comes on and plays, and all the boys love him. And it makes me feel a little bit warm and proud of that. So unless you have kids, you probably don't understand the feeling I get. But when he's at the club and having fun and everyone's like taking him under his wing and playing around with him, it's a really good feeling. And that's what I love about the Brisbane Lions, and that's why I feel like I owe them so much.
And how old did you say Charlie is?
Charlie's three.
Three.
So she's the cheeky devil. She's actually a beautiful kid, and she annoys Chance so much that I think that Chance is annoying her, and I might have to growl at him. So she's got him wrapped around his finger.
And what's the phrase "gaga"?
That means so Emma's from the Yamaji tribe in WA, and "gaga" means uncle. So. Right. If Eric was coming around the house, we'd say, "Gaga, Eric's coming over, Gaga hippie." Just the way, and the way they talk, it's just really funny. So Nick Robinson's a big one who always at my house, and he's one of my best mates up there. He said, "Where's Gaga, Nick, and Auntie Nika?" Who's his partner. So it's just one of those things that just connects all of us.
Yeah, and I've been told the guys love it.
Oh, they do. Well, I guess they're always at my house. They don't come to see me. They rock up downstairs. I'm upstairs playing the computer probably, and... they'll be down there playing around with the kids. So they come over for the games and just play a bit of basketball at the back and play with the kids. So it's good for me.
Yep. You still tight with Eddie Betts, Mitch?
Yeah, I am. I text him. We still got a bit of a group chat actually from the Colton days, which is a pretty funny chat. Me, Aaron Joseph, Dennis Armfield, Jeffrey Garlett. It was Chris Aaron too. Obviously, we know what happened with him. So we all stay in touch a fair bit. So I'll catch up with Eddie tonight. They're staying at the same hotel as us. So he texted me literally half an hour ago.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah. And is it right that you were as crucial as anyone in securing Charlie Cameron's signature as a Lion when he left the Crows a couple of years ago?
I think I played a bit of a role. I don't want to take too much thunder off the recruiting team.
You know, because everyone else does.
Yeah, I know. But they did a lot of work, obviously, to get him here. And the trade period, I spent most of it with him. So I went to Adelaide.
So what's the connection there?
Through Eddie. So when Eddie first went to Adelaide, I went over there and watched one of his games. And Charlie was living with Eddie at the time. And then we just really connected. And he's always at our house. He's one of the ones that's there usually two or three times a week. And his partner, Sari, who obviously doesn't have many friends, and Brisbane's best mates with my partner. So they do a lot together. And that's how I really trust Charlie. And he's been amazing for the club. And I think he was a little bit frustrated last year after he broke his foot. And because I know for a fact when you go to a club, you want to prove everyone wrong. And
he was tracking well, wasn't he?
He was tracking. I reckon
halfway
through. To be honest, I reckon he was AA. He was All-Australian standards before he broke his foot. So and we had the same injury. He handled his injury so much better than I did that year before. So he ended up doing some coaching stuff with the NEFL team, and he really, I guess he really took it on board that kind of role, and he did some stuff for Deadly Choices, yada yada. But he's been a really good one for the club.
Do you get a commission fee for finding him?
Gee, I would have hoped so. I think he might have signed a big deal, so it would have been pretty handy to have that in the bank.
Yeah, Mitch, your form at Brisbane, you one of four best and fairest winners in the first year you were there.
Yep.
You've since been a runner-up to Dane Zorko, who just seems to win it
just
every
keeps
year.
Winning him.
It must be a source of pride to have performed to the levels you have. And even the three games, as we speak this year, for this interview, you've played, you've had a major impact in the three wins in a varied way. Are you proud of your footy as well as to how you're able to use each game differently but at the same time have impact?
Obviously, winning your best and fairest is something you look on after your career and going, oh, I've actually done that. It's a really good thing. I haven't really thought about winning your best and fairest at AFL team yet. I think it's one of those things when you retire you'll think about a little bit more about. But in terms of what I can do now, as you mentioned earlier, I'm turning 30 in June, and I still feel like I haven't reached my pinnacle just yet. My body feels great. I obviously act like a 21-year-old, so I feel pretty young in the mind. So I can play a variety of roles, and that's what keeps me in the team every week. I can do a tagging role, negating. I can go forward and kick goals, tackle pressure in the forward line, or I'm currently playing on the wing where I'm getting my career best GPS results. So it's one of those things that I think that I've got a lot of tools in my bag. So, yeah.
Do you pride yourself on your fearlessness?
Yeah, 100%. Every game, it's changing a lot, the game these days, but I love the physical aspect of the game. I like going to a contest and hearing the crowd kind of take a breath. Like, I can feel that in a game. So that's something that I love about AFL. And sadly, it's starting to leave the game a little bit, but I can always find other avenues to get that little kick out of.
Is it always natural to be that person on the ground? Or is it that voice in your head at times thinking this is going to hurt?
No, not really. When we do training drills and the coach say go 60%, I actually hate that because that's when I feel like I might get injured by going half-assed at a contest.
So that'd be good for your teammates.
Yeah, so they always make a joke out of it and like, oh, Robbo, I mean, it's token pressure, Robbo. So they joke about it. But in game, I feel like I can get an advantage of my opponent if he knows, oh, shit, I'm lining up. Oh, sorry. I'm lining up on Robbo today. It's going to be one of those hard games. That's one I want to be remembered as a hard player. And I don't think I've been in too many conversations with the courageous thing, but it's just something that I hang my hat on. And if I can finish off my career and they say, oh, he's a very hard player, then I'll be happy with that.
Have you ever pulled out?
Maybe one. I'm not too sure. Maybe it was a situation I've just maybe like tightened the shoulders a little bit and like, you know, that little reach they do. So maybe once or twice, but obviously, it outweighs the times I have gone for it, but I think every player's probably SHIT themselves once in a while, so it's only natural.
Yeah. Just bounce it around for a moment. ADHD, you've been diagnosed with that?
Yeah.
And happy to talk about it today?
Yeah, that's fine. It all started, so obviously, through school, all my reports would have been like, just distracts others, and he's, you know, I struggled to pay attention, and I just thought it's because that's who I am. And then it kind of got raised when I was like, my first year at Colton, Rats kind of came to me and said, oh, I think Rats or one of the coaches or the fitness staff were like, oh, maybe you should go to get checked out for this ADHD and see if there's any tablets we can kind of level you out a bit in meetings, because I'd be sitting there listening, but I actually wouldn't be listening.
Right.
Like, I'd never process it very well. So it kind of makes sense in school. But then when up here, I started seeing the counsellor in my first year at Brisbane, and then I went to get some tests done, and they said, yeah, you've actually diagnosed with ADHD. Do you want to take tablets for this? I'm like, I started doing the tablets for a little bit and then I just didn't feel right and I kind of stopped that. So it didn't mellow me out or anything. It just kind of made me feel a bit drowsy and a bit sick a little bit. So I didn't like that. So I've kind of learned to, I think this word maturing is, it's more planning out what I'm going to the meeting for. I kind of understand what I've got to be in there listening to, and it makes a lot of sense to me. And the coaches are really good. We've got all teaching backgrounds. So Fags, you're probably touching him soon. Yeah. He's got a teaching background. Most of the coaches do, really. So for me to be able to talk to them and they can communicate with me on better levels is really good. So I'm more of a on the field, show me on the field what I'm doing instead of in the books and stuff. So it's a bit different that way.
And being diagnosed with it, Mitch, was it – probably wasn't a shock by the way you're talking about it, but did it make sense that people had a reaction to you that may not have until you'd been diagnosed? Or?
Yeah, I think I think it's just a term.
Yeah.
Like now I look at it, I think it's just someone's personality – obviously, there's a lot of kids that struggle out there with that stuff. But for me, I think it's just my personality trait. I'm a bubbly guy. Mm. I talk really fast.
You're intense, aren't you?
I'm intense. When I get home, I love my downtime. Sometimes I hate being around people. I just chill out. And my partner's got that over time. She understands that when I'm, say, a day before a game or day of the game, my mum, my partner, everyone knows not to kind of come near me or because I'm a little bit snappy, just the way I am. Like, that's the way I'm wired. So I'm... obviously, if I've got a task at hand or if I'm really ingrained in something, I want to do it 100%.
Yeah. The football specifics, which we touched on a moment ago, round two against North Melbourne, Aaron Hall was running amok in the first half, and you took him out of play in the second half. So, tagging role, and then last week against the Port Adelaide team, when the team surged in that last quarter quite amazingly, you're crucial to the ball coming out of the middle there too. So you're able to vary your role each week to the situation that's required?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, that's the thing that the coaches know that I've got within me. Obviously, I've tagged some of the best players in the game and done it to a good effect. So I know in myself that if they put me on anyone, that I can beat anyone. I genuinely believe that I can put me on the best player in the comp and I'll just shut him down.
Dusty?
Yeah, I've done it a few times. So obviously, he's got off the leash. And when you're in a bottom team and you're playing against the best team in the comp, they're going to get the ball. It's just fact. So when I look at that, it's more of a stat thing. Like if he gets 20-odd touches and he goes forward and kicks a few goals, he's going to get the praise from the media. But there's probably things around the contest that he didn't do that's what our job was. So obviously there's a lot of boasts to that. But with the Hall one, he was playing on the wing and he was getting a lot of feedback balls. So they kind of we kind of switched up our wing roles and I played strike on him. So I was playing on him through the whole quarter. And to my effect, it just happened to kind of rattle him a little bit, and that's where we got the ball going forward. And last week, Danny Daly, our assistant coach, he said, I think he told Fags to put me on the ball in the last 10 minutes because I was winning some contested footage during the game, and that just worked as well.
It seemed to work. You got out of fair
bit. It did, yeah. So as a winger, I was probably getting a few contested touches when they were like, oh, maybe we'll just chuck him on ball to get a few clearances, and then it worked. But I know that I can play a majority role, so it doesn't really faze me too much.
Yep. Long way to go as we speak in 2019, but is there a sense within the playing group, Mitch, and you're a senior member of that, that anything could happen if it all stays together and you just keep doing what you've been doing?
Well, you just got to look at the teams in the past. I think the Bulldogs might have shocked a few teams making finals and then played really well. Anything can happen in the finals. So, and then Richmond the year after, they made the finals and then they probably weren't expecting to win the grand final, but they played really well. So we just believe we've started well, and the belief obviously has grown within, but we always had that kind of in us, I guess, and just another year in the system and the bodies are getting stronger, capable with more AFL footy. We've brought in some amazing players who, from the start I was a bit sceptical, probably with Lincoln McCarthy, who's been injured through his whole career. He's come up, and our medical team, I'll say, is probably one of the best in the country, and they can get Hodge on the park, they can get anyone on the park, that's what I thought. So they did a really good job of Lincoln. He's had an amazing preseason, so we knew what he had, and obviously Lachlan Neal and Jared Lyons are really good players that we got amazingly, I thought. So I think the balance is better. We're missing that chunk of middle-aged players, and we've got that. And now it's kind of settled a bit, and then the younger players can just do what they do, and they're on fire at the moment. So I don't want to go talking about finals and all this, because I've seen teams start really well, then they could have a few injuries and it goes downhill from there. But we know if we play the brand of footy we like to play, and we're in those games with our contested footy and our tackling and the cliche ones that we need to do well to win games. If we're in those, then we're always a chance to win, and we're a pretty fit team, we believe. So if we're late in the game, we have a chance of winning.
Who's been more crucial in your eyes to what's unfolding at the Lions? The coach, Chris Fagan, or the big-name recruit in Luke Hodge?
I think they both play a really big part. Obviously, Fagan's coming in, and you can throw in David Noble as well, who's set some really high standards for the club. We're building a strong culture. We've got leading teams in who I've had in the past and probably didn't work, but with this certain group, it works really well. Yeah. We have a young leadership group, and any experience they can get's really good. But Luke Hodge coming in settles our back line down a lot in terms of, I think, the average age in the back line was 21 at the time before he got there, and he just takes a lot of pressure off Harris Andrews, Darcy Gardner, and those type of players to play football and not think about setting everyone up all the time. It's Hodge's role. So his experience in the meetings, talking up a lot, has been really good. As I mentioned, David Noble set a great standard at the club off field, and he's always in our meetings, and he's got some really good knowledge of how things should go as well. And as you mentioned, Fags has been massive for me personally and the club itself, so he's been a great pickup. And as I mentioned, average age of 21 when he first got there, so he knows how to communicate to a variety of players through that teaching background, and it's just all starting to gel at the moment, and I think we're going places, yeah.
Yeah. You've obviously been exposed to some great players at two footy clubs. Of the younger crop right now, and I don't mean you to put unnecessary pressure on them, but who excites you most? Because it's a burgeoning list, isn't it, of excitement?
When I look back at it now, at the Colton list, we had an amazing stack of players on paper. Hmm. I'm not too sure why. There could have been a variety of things why we didn't go further than the semi-finals at Carlton. But this team that we got now, it's just complements each other well. Jared Lyons probably isn't getting the praise in the media and stuff at the moment, but the things he does for the club and for the midfield setups, getting there early and setting everyone up and taking a bit of pressure for other players to play their role, he's been amazing for that in that regard. So, and the best thing about our forward line is we've got Charlie Cameron in. Oh, that's a massive pickup. Lee McCarthy's come up and he can kick a bag of goals. We've got Eric Hitwood, who's young, Dan McStay, who's young, and a few small forwards go through there. But you don't know who's going to kick the four or five, and we don't need that to win games. But last week it was Hippy, kicked six. Week before it was Charlie, kicked four. And you got Link McCarthy kicking four in the first game. So it's just a real good variety, and I think it just complements each other well.
And yourself outside of football, in terms of what you're doing right now that ultimately in some way will shape you for the future, you're studying, or you were studying? Is that still...
Yeah, so I got my sports journalism degree through online college.
Why did you want to become one of those?
To be honest, I started doing it purely for the fact to try and bridge the gap between the media and the players. I didn't understand some avenues or why their motives were. And studying for that, honestly, just... The way they ask questions, they could ask same question but four times over just to, in different ways to get another answer for you. So that's why I honestly did it. I obviously loved writing from the get-go.
Interesting
so,
origin.
Yeah, so I obviously liked writing from the get-go. So writing articles for Fox Footy was a big one for me. Sorry to give them a plug on your AFL podcast, but I do enjoy the media, and I think more video podcasting would be something that I'd love to do, just to be honest and open on that kind of thing.
Go and get it out of the way now.
Here we go. Here's my plug. Rip Through It, if you can go to... So Rip Through It is something I just started with Sean Tobin from Exclusive Insight.
Used to work at the Gold Coast Suns. In business with Gary Ablett.
He was Anthony at Gold Coast for 5 years. Yeah. So he's got that with Gary Ablett Jr. at the moment, and that's something that Gary's pretty big on. So post-footy, I see him probably doing a role like that, similar. And he just gives an aspect of the media life, and I can just talk about a player's perspective. But that's something I enjoy. But yeah, I do like writing articles, but in terms of post-footy, there's a variety of things I can do, but I'm really passionately about being a player manager.
Yeah, your own manager thinks you might be following in his footsteps, Tim Hazel.
Oh, yeah, I've put him through absolutely everything, so all his experience is down to me. But no, I really do enjoy that aspect of getting people good deals. Obviously, didn't have a hand in Charlie, really, but just like getting him through all that kind of stuff, I really enjoy that, and I like seeing people succeed. So I obviously have a lot of knowledge of what I should have done, shouldn't have done, and I can see that in players coming up. So that's when I talk to young boys now, how to go about certain things, and I just love that aspect of football.
Have you got a recruiting target right now for 2020?
I got one for next year.
Have you?
Yeah, we'll just...
Can you hint?
I'll give you on the Rip Through It podcast. We go on there. I'll talk about it.
For Victorian player, at least. Can you limit it to a state?
No, I can't.
I'll do some digging on that. Esports, I believe. Now, I don't get esports. It's not being targeted at someone who's 48 years of age and is clearly not there in their demographic. But why is the fascination with esports?
I've always been a gamer. My two brothers used to play a lot of computer games, obviously, when I was an 8-9-year-old, and I was actually handy at it back in the day. So I put that on the back burner when I got to footy, because you can't do both, really. Being a professional athlete and playing a game pretty much full-time, the hours just don't work. So when this game Fortnite came along, I kind of didn't really understand. It didn't make sense to me. You chop down trees and build forts, and I was like, that sounds really stupid to me. But literally took off, obviously, as a phenomenon. And a lot of the boys at the club were all over it. About 10, 15 blokes were just ingrained in this game. So I gave it a try, and I was actually really good at it from the get-go. So that kind of took off. And then an esports club, Chiefs esports club, kind of said, look, we've noticed you're doing some good things in this space. Would you like to join the team? And they're a professional team, and they pay their players. Obviously, I don't get paid. But that's where it kind of took off. And I really like that. That's going to be the future of sports, esports, I reckon. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, so you could watch that space.
People paying money to watch other people play a video
you do,
game.
Have
I been too simplistic in saying that?
No, that's it. So literally you pay to watch AFL players, you pay to watch professionals play that game.
I don't get it, Mitch.
Well, so if you can't do it, you're going to pay to watch someone else do it.
Yeah.
So that's why you like footy. Yeah. But some people can't play footy, so they pay to watch people do... No, that's the highest pinnacle of sport, to watch the AFL players do their thing. So that's the same with anything, really. And with Fortnite, it's no excuses. Like a beginner to a professional, is the gap there is ridiculous. So that's why people pay to watch you play. And honestly...
And you played in a tournament?
Yes.
Recently?
Yeah, so I really never saw myself playing Fortnite, a video game on Margaret Court. I just never really pictured that. But when I saw that, I was like, holy, that this is going to be a big thing one day, esports. Is, and the kids there, for the YouTubers and stuff that were playing that tournament, the kids, I've never seen that for Dusty, for nobody that's in the AFL. I've never seen the way they went off of seeing those people.
Really?
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I was shocked. I was like, what? So that's why I see all these companies getting involved with esports at the moment. It's gonna. I think Adelaide just picked up a Fortnite team.
Yeah.
So that's. I was talking to Noble about that. It was actually because he's actually really fond of esports. So he's all for it.
Okay, Mitch, really appreciate your time today and your openness. And it's. I think anyone who's followed the journey, seen the lows, and they're now seeing a lot of highs. And mm-hmm. I think the highs outweigh the lows now. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? As you sit here early in 2019.
Oh, it's good to hear that positive feedback, I think. There's obviously some things that I'd love to do more in the footy world, but I guess as time would tell.
Such as?
Just play finals again for the Brisbane Lions. Feel like that I'll repay them by playing finals. And I think they thoroughly deserve to be up there. So that's one thing I'd love to do before I retire for sure.
You can't tell us the name of that recruiting project?
Nope.
All right. We'll do some digging. But Mitch Robinson, thank you for joining us on In The Game.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.